My part of the course will be dedicated to two-dimensional conformal field theories. As Jaume mentioned already, and yeah, it's a brilliant thing and it's mystery that in two dimensions, conformal group is much bigger than in higher dimensions. If like in higher dimensions we have some like finite dimensional Lie group of symmetries, in two dimensions it extends to infinitely dimensional Virasoro algebra and Virasoro group. And we will discuss it more afterward. But now I want to step back to statistical physics course, which you had before, as far as I know. And probably most of things which I will present today, you know already from that course. But I want to just make a recap and make emphasis which are important for two-dimensional theories, two-dimensional conformal field theories and like conformal invariants and why it's so relevant. I will be talking about two-dimensional statistical models. And in general, what is like statistical physics model and like in their critical points. So what are like two-dimensional statistical models? Yes?
Sorry, will your half of the course have notes in the portal?
Notes? Yes, I will be publishing them. So I have notes for today and I will be trying to publish notes for next parts before the lectures because this part of course was not taught before, so there are no like prepared lecture notes and I didn't manage to prepare them in advance. So I will be trying to post them on fly. And like prototypical example which I will be dealing with is Eisen model, probably you've heard about it many times before. So we will have some kind of lattice, it might be rectangular lattice, it might be triangular lattice, and apparently for phase transitions it doesn't matter at all. And at each side of the model, of the lattice, we have some degree of freedom which is called classical spin. So this is some sigma I, whose value can be plus minus one. I don't know how to draw them. So something like this. Yeah, so on and so forth. And configurations, they're like, if we have lattice of n sides, we have 2 to the power of n configurations, so we have 2 to the power of n ways to choose where is spin down and where is spin up. To each configuration we can assign statistical weight, which I will be calling P, and P is 1 over z times e to minus energy of configuration. I will be calling configurations S at that point. So this is probability of this configuration to appear. And this statistical weight, this denominator Z, it's called statistical partition function of the model. And it can be computed as a sum of these weights over all configurations. Why is the normalization factor is like that? So from these two things, it's obvious that sum over all configurations S of probability of configuration equals to zero. Equals to one. So this is indeed a probability. In general, like it's not applicable not only for Eisen model. In principle, it's applicable for any statistical model, and you can compute, partition function like that. And for particularly for Eisen model, this like energy, sometimes I will be calling it Hamiltonian. It's equal to minus H sum over all spins in a lattice. Sigma I minus K sum over all neighboring spins. Sigma I, sigma j. Yeah, so when I draw things like this, so I and j in angular brackets, this means that we pick spins which are neighboring on the lattice. So for example, this is I, this is j. Yeah, so what parameters do we have here? In principle, I have temperature, which is here, and I will mention a bit later how it's related to, basically it's thermodynamical temperature, it's the same temperature which you have in thermodynamics. This is called magnetic field, and this is called coupling constant of the model, if you want. Yeah, so in principle, these kind of models, they can simulate different kind of physical systems. So sometimes people call them lattice gas model because they can approximate phase transitions in two-dimensional gas or like higher dimensional gas. In this case, it's two-dimensional gas where you have like droplets of liquid, droplets of gas, and then like you can look how they interact with each other and how you turn from water to gas phase, from liquid to gas phase. This can be applied to simulate like two-dimensional magnetic systems. And in principle, this is like feature of theoretical physics that you can build one model which can describe different setups. So how this is related to thermodynamics? Because here we have like enormous number of degrees of freedom. We have lots of configurations, but in thermodynamics, we have only like a couple of parameters. So in principle, to describe like thermodynamical parameters, they're coming in pairs. So these pairs are, for example, entropy and temperature. Another pair is volume and pressure. Yeah, sorry, probably I should draw pressure like this. And another pair is, for example, magnetization and magnetic field, external magnetic field. And can anyone tell me why I put these parameters in one column and these parameters in another column? What's common for these three parameters and what's common for that three parameters? Yeah, so these parameters are extensive, which means that they're proportional to volume, and these are intensive, which means that they are not scaling. If we double size of the system, these parameters do not scale. I'm not going to discuss much how to relate statistical physics to thermodynamics, but one observation like which can be like suggestive and which gives right answers is that partition function of the system, it can be approximated.
Sorry to interrupt, just want to let you know, those are actually motorized. So if you
pull
them down, you may actually pull them off the tracks and have them come down. So there's a little touch panel right in front of the chalkboard, and you can now move them up and down from there.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no worries.
But did they break it already?
No.
We'll find out.
Okay. Thanks.
I'll see you, fine.
Thanks. One way to connect like statistical physics things to thermodynamics things is to say, okay, when the system is very big, the system is standing, so like most of configurations are actually irrelevant. So they're not like essential and they're not typical. And like what means that the system have thermodynamic limit? It means that there is some typical state, typical from the point of view of thermodynamics. And most of properties of the system can be described by this typical state or state like this one. So in our case, it means that a partition function of the system can be approximated by exponent from for purposes of thermodynamics. It can be approximated as e exponent of entropy minus average energy over t. So and like e to the power of s is kind of degeneracy of this typical state. And this is the energy of typical state. And like energy of typical state coincides with average energy over the ensemble of the states. And like this is like a crucial thing how to relate thermodynamics to statistical physics. And if this kind of approximation is not valid in the system, in statistical system, typically it means that system doesn't have good thermodynamical limit. It also happens sometimes. It means that there is no typical state for this system. Okay. Yeah, so just for clarity, what this average energy, it's sum over all states. And in general, if I put any quantity here, like any observable, whatever it is, it's sum over all states, probability of the state times like this quantity computed on this particular state, this particular configuration. Yeah, so now this is like very powerful formula actually. And to link thermodynamics to statistical physics, it doesn't need anything more. And it's very convenient sometimes to introduce free energy, which is defined like this. So F is free energy, or like F is equals to minus T times logarithm of partition function. And it's very convenient because actually you can derive all the other thermodynamical properties of the system using this free energy and the first law of thermodynamics. So this thing, and also we have like relations like this. So TdS equals to du. And yeah, so sometimes I will call this average energy as u plus pdv. Yeah, so basically we don't need anything more. So, and yeah, using this formula, we can have a like closed system of equations. So this equals to like minus Ts plus u. Okay, so and using these two equations, we can, for example, derive how pressure of the system is related to like other things. So this kind of equation, or we can derive that entropy is equal to minus df over dt. And why, for example, this equation is valuable? So if we are describing like thermodynamical systems phenomenologically, how people did it like 200 years ago, we don't have microscopic description. We don't start from there. Typically, we have some phenomenological equation of state. So yeah. So for example, for ideal gas, it's P equals to N K Boltzmann T. And I actually dropped K Boltzmann everywhere just because I can and I don't want to deal with it. But this is equation of state. And you can derive this kind of equation from some first principles. You can think about some molecules which are flying around in a box and then compute pressure which they impose on walls of this box. But you can also derive this kind of equation using statistical physics. You can compute partition function, you can find what is free energy, and then actually this equation, it it allows you to derive this kind of relation for thermodynamical properties of ideal gas. And this tells us, like, this is an important thing, because, like, theoretical physics is constraining results of the experiments. So we can measure, like, temperature of system, we can measure density, we can measure pressure, and then, like, apparently they are not, like, three random numbers, but they're related by one equation, and this allows us to derive this equation from microscopics. Yeah, another relation which will be important for us in the following is that M equals to dF over dH for magnetic systems. So actually, for Ising model, this will be the relation, because we will not care much about pressure and volume. However, we can discuss them, but we care more about this. And another kind of thing, which is not thermodynamical, but it's also kind of universal and depends on large scale structure of the system, is a two-point correlation function. So this is here. So another thing is, like, two-point correlation functions. And especially at large distances. By the way, probably I had to ask earlier, isn't it too small? Should I write bigger characters? It's okay? Okay. And, like, two-point function, again, like, it depends on system very much, because for different system, you have different degrees of freedoms, and you can construct different observables. But for purposes which I will explain in a minute, it doesn't matter much which kind of correlation function you pick up. So we will be dealing with a spin-spin correlation function. So it's cool. So I just pick up any two spins. The system is translationary invariant, and probably I had to mention it earlier that I imagine that my system is, like, very big and the boundary conditions are periodic. And I just pick up, like, I should not do that. Okay, so I have some spin here. I call it sigma zero. I have some spin, some far away sigma r, and I take average value of product of the spin minus averages of themselves one by one, and here is the distance r. Yes, so how can I deal with them? But how? And there is another thing for another, so it's only for this.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, yeah, thank you. Yes, it's very nice. Thanks. So this is a two-point correlation function, and when distances go to infinity, typically it behaves like g of r equals to r minus d minus 1 over 2 times g over r over xi. And where g is typically behaves exponentially, so it's e to the minus r over xi, so it decreases exponentially. And parametric psi is called correlation length. So since the correlation function decreases exponentially, this length, it tells you like at which distances you don't have actually correlations any longer. So this is size of the region within which spins are correlated with each other. Okay, any questions at this point?
Sorry, mm-hmm. Can you
repeat what you said at the last
one? Just at the end.
I just said that if you are not like right in a phase transition point, this correlation function, it decreases exponentially, and this factor g corresponds to exponential decrease, and you also have some power like prefactor. And parameter psi, it tells you like how fast is this exponent, so how fast does it decrease. So if you have like region of size psi, within this region, your spins will be correlated. But if you go like for distance 2 psi, you like spin here will not feel spin there. So you're like connected, it's called connected correlation function. Your connected correlation function is 0, which means that averages of 2 spins out like at such or distances is just equal to like averages of each single spin, which means that they do not like interact with each other much. Okay. So now phase transitions, as I promised. So phase transitions happen when F is not smooth enough. So how to detect them? So first of all, we have first derivatives of F, of free energy, which are magnetization. So the most relevant in our case is magnetization. And sometimes just magnetization is not, it's not smooth. And like prototypical example, which we are dealing with and which Jaume already mentioned, he drawn this picture. So here we have temperature, here we have external magnetic field for two-dimensional or higher dimensional Ising model as well. And here we have like line of phase transitions, and a bit later we'll discuss how we can see this. And this is a so-called first phase transition. So here, H is not, oh, sorry, not H, but M is not smooth. Which means if we take, like, if you have some temperature here, T1, and we take magnetization of T1, H equals plus 0, this will be equals to minus magnetization of T1, H equals minus 0. Which means that like if the system is very unstable, so if you write on this line, and if you have infinitesimal like magnetic field, like system immediately breaks down to one state, either like all spins are up or all spins are down. And this is called first order phase transition. So first order phase transition, which means that first derivatives of F are not smooth. And as you can extrapolate, and definitely you already heard about that, second order phase transition, it's like all the same, but second derivatives. Of f are not smooth, and the second order phase transition point it's actually located here in a system. So, and as far as I understand, this is a typical situation. So, lower energy. If you have more parameters in a system, so in principle, you can in a system you can have more parameters than just like magnetic field and temperature. So, if you have more parameters, lower order phase transitions are happening on smaller dimension submanifolds. So here, first order phase transition is the whole line, and second order phase transition is only one point. And if you had, like, for example, three parameters, first order phase transitions will be happening on a plane, second order will be on the lines, and third orders will be on points. So it's like hierarchy. What kind of second derivatives I mean here? So again, like for our system, we have basically two main external parameters, which is temperature and which is magnetic field. So one parameter is called one second derivative of free energy is called magnetic susceptibility, which is d to f over dh squared, if I'm not wrong with the sign. Yes, I'm not wrong. And another one, it's called heat capacity. And this is second derivative with respect to temperature. So the claim is that these things, they have singular behavior around the second order phase transition point. We will be mostly interested in this particular point. And the reason for that is that at this kind of phase transitions, alternative definition of second order phase transition is correlation length diverges. And we can immediately see that this one definition and another definition, they are related to each other. Let's pick, for example, magnetic susceptibility. It's easy computation. Everyone can check that actually it's equal to sum over I and j. Sometimes I will be calling, like I will be having not two point functions which are like r and zero, but I will be having two point functions which are gij, which means sigma I sigma j minus sigma I sigma j, just for convenience. So it's easy to check that actually this quantity is equal to gij, sum over I and sum over j. Alternatively, we can write it down like this. Probably it's even better, since a system is translation invariant, correlation function depends only on difference. So this can be approximated now as a volume times integral from 0 to plus infinity of r to power of d minus 1 times g, and here we have r dr. So basically I just replaced this summation by integral, and I just took a sum over I, which gives me volume factor, and then we have to take sum over j, and yeah, it looks like this. And so now we can use, so most, like the biggest part of this integral, the most essential contribution, it's not contribution when in short distances, because in this kind of statistical models, correlation functions cannot be singular at short distances, because we have like lattice spacing and no singularities can occur for a system which is on a lattice on a short distances. There is like natural UV regularization. So major contribution for this integral is from large distances. And as I told you here, like the large distance behavior is controlled by this factor and basically by this scale. So yeah, now we can just say, okay, this is equal to volume times integral from 0 to infinity r to d minus 1 times r minus d minus 1 over 2 times g of r over xi. And yeah, this is like just from dimensional analysis, this is xi to d plus 1 over 2. Just because this is the only scale which we have in this integral. We can think that we are just taking change of integration variables. And just because of change of integration variable, r over xi equals to y, we have some constant times this correlation length and some power. So, and since this is like a main contribution, if xi have some kind of singularity, if xi diverges, it means, if chi diverges, it means that xi also diverges. So a heat capacity diverges together with the correlation length. Oh, sorry, not heat capacity, but magnetic. Yeah, and now I will write down so-called critical exponents. I will introduce parameter T, which is temperature minus critical temperature divided by critical temperature, which is convenient like around the critical point. And second parameter will be still magnetic field, because at second order phase transition, this external magnetic field is also zero. So these are like two parameters which are zero at critical point. And using this parameter, I can like assume that we have some like scaling behavior. So we have some kind of singularity, which is power-like singularity for my parameters. So like, so first of all, if magnetic field is zero, heat capacity behaves like T to power minus alpha. So alpha is like parameter which controls how bad is singularity of heat capacity in a critical point. M, magnetization, when h goes to plus zero, just for certainty, behaves like minus t to power of beta. This is another one. Then we have chi h equals to zero, proportional to t to power minus gamma. And another one for m is like when m is at t equals to zero, this scales like average value of, yeah, sorry, h to power of 1 over delta. So those are so-called alpha, beta, gamma, and delta are called thermodynamic critical exponents. Uh, because yeah, they tell you how your singularity develops around the critical point. And there is another pair of critical exponents which are coming from curvation functions. So first, like how psi diverges around the critical point. So we have this like critical exponent nu, and how exactly at critical point when temperature is equal to zero, like reduced temperature and magnetic field equals to zero, so a correlation function is power-like, and it's like important feature. So there is like some factor which is present in like, yeah, which easy to track. So d minus two here, it's easy, like easy factor, and complicated thing is this eta. So we have two extra critical exponents, nu and eta, like a correlation function, like. Critical exponents. And actually, this formula is quite remarkable. If you remember our tutorial on Thursday or like lectures of Jaume, we had two-point correlation functions in conformal field theories. And if you had like two like field of dimension delta, point x times the same field at point zero, two-point correlation function was equal to 1 over x to power of 2 delta, right? And this is not a coincidence, and apparently spin field, so like we'll discuss later in my part of the course that Ising model at critical point can be described by two-dimensional conformal field theory. And in conformal field theory, you have different fields. And spin field, which we have here, it will be one of the fields in this Ising CFT. And looking at this formula, and knowing like this critical exponent, you can extract scaling dimension of this corresponding field in Ising CFT. Or you can act in an opposite way. You can use an algebraic consistency, which we'll be describing, which we'll be discussing a lot. We can like extract what are dimensions of the fields in Ising CFT, and using that, we can describe what are these critical exponents eta. And this is the way how we will do. Okay, questions on this part? I will move to renormalization group and further things. Okay. So there is like a natural question, as we are theoreticians, we are asking like how to compute critical exponents. Compute means we know how to relate microscopics to thermodynamics, but in principle, computation of partition function is like complicated thing. It's very complicated function. in some models you can compute it like exactly, and in particular in case of Ising model, two-dimensional Ising model, this model is exactly solvable, and partition function can be computed as explicit function, but it's like some pretty scary expression depending on the elliptic functions and like some determinants of enormous size. So it's not like kind of function which we want to deal with. So we need some approximate methods as long as we don't have power of two-dimensional CFTs. And one way it's like mean field theory. You discussed it during statistical physics course, right? This is like approximation. Okay. But yeah, just to recall, in this approximation, we say, okay, we have our spin field sigma, or like spin variable, but this spin variable is equals to magnetization plus sigma I minus m. And it's exact formula, but it assumes that this is something like some major contribution to sigma I, and this is some correction. So we have some like mean field which corresponds to magnetization, and the reason to think like that is that like actually magnetization is average of sigma I. So this is like one point correlation function of our field. So like we like replace sigma I by sigma I plus correction. And in a Hamiltonian now, or like an expression for the energy, we can use this approximation by neglecting this squares of this contribution. So we neglect small terms, like we neglect fluctuations of, like interaction of fluctuations of fields. So we take into account fluctuation, but we neglect interaction of fluctuations. And this gives like we have like Hamiltonian of our Ising. And this is, in this approximation, it's equal to dimension times k m squared times number of sites minus and that's like that's why we have done our approximation. So now we don't have terms which are quadratic in spins. We don't have interaction of spins. Now everything decouples in like mean field contribution and interaction of spin with mean field and with magnetic field. So like we don't have interaction of spins, we have only like interaction of mean field with spins. And this is very good because now we can just explicitly compute partition function in this approximation because spin decouples and we can just side by side compute the partition function, and the answer is the partition function equals to e to minus dk m squared times hyperbolic cosine. Oh, here is also 2. 2dk m plus h to the power of n. So we have like n equal contributions corresponding to one spin in the mean field of other spins. This gives us free energy. Note also sorry for this, but like I just neglected temperature because in expression for partition function we have e to minus exponent to minus e over t, and I observe temperature in a magnetic field and in a coupling constant. So I will not keep in temperature in the following. So you can think that like this interaction, this coupling constant, it corresponds to temperature now. So this is a magnetic field, and this is kind of inverse temperature. And that's common trick, just for convenience purposes, just to remove extra redundancy in parameters. So now, from this, free energy per site, which is like free energy divided by number of sites, just important convenience thing to do is it's dKm squared minus logarithm of hyperbolic cosine of 2dKm plus h. But there is one very strange thing with this free energy. Who can tell what's strange thing with it? It have to do with Z pairs. So the answer is that so far, probably I didn't articulate it properly, but free energy depends, or like any kind of like free energy or entropy, it depends only on one parameter from the pair. So some like the free energy can depend on pressure, or it can depend on volume, but it cannot depend on pressure at volume at the same time. And here we have free energy, which at the same time depends on magnetization and on a magnetic field, which is not a good thing. And this is because we have done our approximation. We assume that we have magnetic field, but at the same time we have some kind of mean field in which those spins exist. It's okay to, as physicists, we can do this kind of approximation. It's good physics approximation, but we need to keep everything mathematically consistent. And the consistency equation is equation probably. Sorry, it's not very good organization on the blackboard. Is equation that magnetic field is equal to minus derivative of free energy with respect to magnetization is minus derivative of free energy with respect to magnetic fields. So this is a consistency condition. And basically, this is equation which tells us how magnetization depends on magnetic field. And in this particular case, this equation is that magnetization equals to hyperbolic tangens of 2dKm plus h. This I just took derivative here, and basically this equation, you can think that this is the same, you can think a bit, but and see that this is the same equation as this one. So we say that magnetization is a one-point correlation function of spins, because this is actually a one-point correlation function of spins. It might look a bit. A bit strange equation, and it's hard to solve exactly, but it's quite easy to analyze. So we have linear function with respect to magnetization here, and we have this function on the right, and assuming that h is equal to zero, which is okay now for this consideration, we have some function which behaves like this. So at minus and plus infinity it's constant, and in between of minus and plus infinity it's something smooth. And here we have this parameter 2dK. And this parameter tells us what is the slope of the function, second function, at zero. So what slope is here? And if this parameter is if it's very small, then this is very smooth and slowly varying function. So we have only one intersection point. So this is 2dK less than one. And if it's very big, this is very sharp function. it's like this. So this is 2dk greater than 1. And what's the principal difference between these two situations? In one case, we have only one intersection point, so this solution have, this equation have only one solution. And in another case, we have three intersection points. So we have like here, here, and here, which means that we have three solutions now. And this is exactly what we discussed here. So depending on the value of temperature, because k is now kind of temperature parameter, depending on value of temperature, we have either like three solutions. And actually, like in this case, this solution is unstable. So we have either two stable solutions or we have one stable solution. And like one solution is m equals to 0, which corresponds to temperatures above critical temperature, and or two solutions like minus plus minus, so symmetric under reflection, like plus minus 1. And this solution corresponds to small temperature under the phase transition. Now taking approximation around I have small amount of time, so I will be like a bit faster. Like using approximation that like we are around critical points, so like m and h are small, we don't want to go far from critical point. We can simplify this expression and get something like some constant a, or probably it's better to use capital, like a times t m squared plus some another constant b times m to the power of 4, and plus some constant c times magnetization times magnetic field. And this t is the same t which we had before. It's like reduced temperature. And in principle, all the important, and this is approximation. It's not exact equality. It's just approximation of this around like small values of m and h. But why? What good about this approximation? It captures all the critical features of the system. So depending on value of t, this function is either like this, which is for t greater than 0, or which means like t greater than 0, right? So it's like high temperatures and there is only one minimum, or t smaller than 0, which means that function is like this. So there are like two minimas which correspond to low temperature phase under the phase transition. I hope everyone using this can derive the critical exponents. It's some kind of exercise, and you discussed it in statistical physics. So the answer in this case is that like alpha equals to 0, beta equals to 1/2, gamma equals to 1, delta equals to 3. Upgrading this framework a little bit more. So for this, you need to assume that your magnetic field is not homogeneous, it's not constant, but it varies slowly. And mean field also varies slowly. You can derive also critical exponents for correlation functions, which are nu equals to 1/2 and eta equals to 0. Questions on mean field theory? So this is like very nice approximation. And if you have statistical model, it's like first thing which you can do, because typically this analysis doesn't involve much complicated mathematics, and it can give you at least some understanding of what the system is. It's sometimes it's also called Landau approach or Landau-Ginzburg approach in the literature. Okay, and like the more interesting thing, and the thing which have more like power, predictive power, is renormalization group flow. Oh, that's true. But only two are visible at the same time, or all three can. Okay, yeah, sorry, I will probably. Anyway, I need this picture, so I will probably erase this. And yeah, so I will be very brief with normalization group flow because we will have tutorial dedicated to it. Because from what I understood from your statistical physics course, you didn't have like RG flow for two-dimensional system in Kadanov approach, right? Like for block spins, no? Okay, then we'll discuss it on the tutorial. I think it's like nice thing to compute at some point. Yeah, so renormalization group flow tells us that like we can coarse grain our system. So we have like, now we have some lattice of spins and we can now say, okay, let's coarse grain it. Let's take block spins, like groups of four spins, and replace them by one spin. Now, like, let's look from a bit farther on our system. Since we are interested in Lagrange physics, we can try to do that. And it's very nice because, like, once you're trying to do that, you see that, like, it's very hard to match physics in a way that partition function is preserved. So, like, you have some partition function of like h and k, and we want it to be equal to partition function of h prime and k prime, where h prime and k prime are parameters of a coarse grain system. Because when you're trying to just match configurations of configurations and interactions of spins and of block spins, you see that block spins have more interactions. They're not only like next to nearest neighboring interaction. And like the forms of interactions, they're more diverse compared to interactions which you had before the step. Therefore, we need not to consider Hamiltonian of Ising, which we had before, but we need to say, okay, now we consider more couplings. So we say we have like some k0 here, minus k1 sum over I sigma I minus k2 sum over ij I sigma j minus k3 sum over ijk I sigma j sigma k and so on. And in principle, also this interaction can be not only like nearest neighbor interaction, but next to nearest neighbor as well. And you will see this in the tutorial in details. But apparently, renormalization group flow is a statement. Now we have like extended partition function. We not only have these two couplings, but we have like Z, which depends on like the whole set of infinite couplings. The renormalization group flow is organized in such a way that partition function of parameters before the step equals to partition function of parameters after the step. But this is a partition function computed on a block spins. So we want to match physics on like smaller scales and on bigger scales, step by step. And this gives us equation that like new couplings are some like RG, which is some kind of mapping of old couplings. So we have discrete dynamics on our coupling constant driven by block spin procedure. What happens here? So we have like here, like B is equal to two spins in a row, and here we have like B equals to two spins in a column. which means that, for example, number of spins under this mapping, like n prime, like the simplest thing, it's equal to b, which is 2 in our case, to power minus d times n. So number of block spins is by this factor smaller than number of spins of the initial system. Similar thing happens to correlation lengths. So psi prime, since this is like a some variable whose dimension is just length, psi prime equals to b to minus first times n, right? Oh, sorry. Psi. And actually, like this equation is—it's very simple, but it's very important for us, because as we discussed before, phase transition points—they correspond to infinite correlation lengths. So the fixed points of a normalization group flow will correspond to phase transition points, because when xi equals to infinity, this or zero, which is also important, then xi prime equals to xi. And this is the only case. So the only case how to keep number to be the same when you multiply it by some factor is either this number is zero or this number of infinity. And when so the points where psi equals to zero, they are called like fixed points. It's not a good terminology, but that's what is it. And when xi is equals to infinity, it's critical points. Yes. So now this tells us that if you want to study critical points of Ising model or another statistical model, we have to look for points where xi is equal to infinity. Because this is also like when your correlation length is infinite, and as we discussed before, it's like it's what we are looking for. Yeah. So let's assume that we have some point of this kind. Like let's call like the value of parameter, like let it be k star, and it's like special feature is a normalization group of k star equals to k star. So this is a fixed point. And we can ask like what's happening around this point, what happens near the phase transition. Let's we can expand this discrete dynamics as like some fixed point contribution plus k minus k star times rg prime of k star plus blah blah blah. Or we can actually like we can reorganize it a little bit, so we can move this to the left hand side, so it will be like rg of k minus rg of k prime equals to like this times k prime. And this is a pictorial thing. More precise formula would be like in if I write it down in indices, like rg of k a, where a index corresponding to coupling constant, equals to k a star minus this. It's like almost sum over TAB times KB minus KB star sum over DB, where TAB is DRG of KA over DKB at K equals to K star. So this is kind of like kind of linearization of dynamics of coupling constant around the fixed point of normalization group flow. And apparently all the relevant physics, all the physics which is important for us, it's contained in this matrix. And all the scaling exponents which we discussed before, they can be extracted from from this thing. So probably I'm running out of time. Oh, yes, I already, sorry. My bad. So just to tell a few more words, and we will discuss this more on a tutorial. So this matrix can be diagonalized. And this B is the same B which we had here, so it's like number of spins in a block in each dimension. This is eigenvector, and this is eigenvalue of this matrix. And then we have to take a look what are the values of these parameters. And depending on what their values are, we can classify operators corresponding to them. So it might be a bit complicated now for you because I'm Russian, but these vectors, they correspond to some combinations of coupling constants in the Hamiltonian, like k0, k1, k2, so those are like some kind of linear combination. And what's important about this combination is that if we write down like ui, which equals to sum over a eai ki minus ka star, under normalization group flow, they transforms as ui maps to b to power yi ui. And so these things, they are kind of like scaling dimensions as we had on our first tutorial or as we discussed with Jaume. Like they're scaling dimensions of coupling constants, basically. They're how coupling constants are scaling when we change like length scale in our system, but on a quantum level. So like it's like exact equation in the sense that it's not only like classical that we take a look at Lagrangian and compute like some dimension, but it's like quantum in the sense that it's result of computation which involves all the fluctuations in the statistical model. And apparently, there are not too many of those which are such that b of yi greater than 1, which is relevant in this case, and b to yi less than 1 are irrelevant. So relevant are those which are like growing under the normalization group flow, and this is consistent with the intuition which we had before. So, and this, I will move this to tutorial. So there is a way to like, so this is a very powerful equation, and there is a way knowing these yi's, which are like scaling dimensions, to extract all the critical exponents which we had before. And the formulas are the following. Alpha, so we have like two most relevant operators. And apparently, or like not apparently, the two most relevant coupling constants are like k1 and k2, and corresponding scaling exponents are named like yh and yt. Our exponents here can be expressed as like 2 minus d over yt beta equals to d minus yh over yt, gamma equals to 2yh minus d over yt again. And then delta equals to yh over d minus yt, yh. Those expression might look a bit strange, but we will derive them in the tutorial. And then two extra for correlation functions are nu equals to 1 over yt and eta equals to what is eta? Oh, it's d plus 2 minus 2yh. And this is brilliant because this means that actually these like pretty random numbers, which a priori have nothing to do with each other, like five numbers or six numbers, they can be expressed using only two numbers, which is like very non-trivial prediction. So if like imagine that we measure them on an experiment, and again, like as I told before, like theoretical physics is science about how to constrain results of experiments. And like we have results of experiments, we have six different numbers which we can measure, and then we see that actually they're like very much dependent with each other, relations on them. And yeah, probably I will finish with these relations. For example, alpha plus 2 beta plus gamma equals to 2. Alpha plus beta 1 plus delta equals to 2. Alpha equals to 2 minus d nu. And gamma equals to nu 2 minus eta. So we have like six variables, and we have four relations on them, which is super non-trivial prediction. And this is a prediction of like renormalization group approach. And the power of conformal field theory, as they have to advertise conformal field theory, is that we can extract exact values of this and this. And knowing their exact value, we can derive all the critical exponents in like exact way, which is like a lot. Probably that's it. Your questions?
Index there,
yes.
Like in the equation, it should be b one above. Yeah.
Here. Oh, you're right. It's a. Sorry. It should be EABI. Yes, thank you.
So it's a left eigenvector, right?
Yes, it's left eigenvector. Yes, thank you. Yeah, then see you on Wednesday. And those who didn't take part in last week's tutorial, please, by the next tutorial, send me like your report, how you worked on it, or come and discuss with me how you worked on it. Okay?